Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, April 2nd, 2013. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Judge rules former Idaho Transportation Department director who's suing the state for wrongful termination was not an at-will employee. State responds to scathing prison health care lawsuit. Hanford hypothyroidism downwinders. Attorneys say settlement offers too low. And Moscow City Council to vote on 2013 goals for the year tonight. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Latah County Sheriff's detectives are processing a crime scene at the Mineral Mountain Rest Area north of Potlatch on U.S. 95, where a woman was reported shot shortly after 4 a.m. this morning. The Lewiston Tribune website reports deputies found the woman with a gunshot wound to the abdomen, and an ambulance from Potlatch transported her to Gritman Medical Center. The Sheriff's Department has not released the name of the wounded woman. The rest area is at mile marker 370, about a mile south of the Benoit County line. Federal Judge Ronald E. Bush ruled in a 57-page opinion Saturday, former Idaho Transportation Department Director Pam Lowe was not an at-will employee and therefore entitled to due process before being fired in 2009. The ruling means Lowe's lawsuit against the state can move forward. Lowe is suing the state for wrongful termination because of her status as a whistleblower and because of gender discrimination. She was fired by the Idaho Transportation Board, which is a 7-member body whose members are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the state senate. Lowe contends she was fired because she interfered with a $50 million road construction contract awarded to Otter campaign donors, URS Corporation and CH2M Hill. The two companies have given Otter a total of $22,000 in campaign donations since 2005. Idaho Deputy Attorney General Newell Squires argued in court documents Idaho Code Section 40-503, passed in the early 1970s, makes Lowe's job at will. The passage in question refers to the ITD director and reads, "The director shall serve at the pleasure of the board and may be removed by the board for inefficiency, neglect of duty, malfeasance, or nonfeasance in office." Lowe's attorneys argued the same passage means she was entitled to due process, meaning she would be informed of any problems with her job performance and be given the opportunity to respond. Judge Bush said the passage is not a, quote, model of clarity, and he researched public remarks from former governors Cecil Otter and Phil Batt, who, while in office, said they believed the transportation director's job was an at-will position. Bush decided that lawmakers were concerned about wrongful political influence over the transportation department, and therefore Lowe was entitled to due process. Bush has not addressed the gender discrimination issue. Lowe is the only woman to serve as Idaho Transportation Department director. The department has been dominated by males since it was established. The Idaho Transportation Board replaced Lowe with Brian Ness, who was recruited from the Michigan Department of Transportation, where he had worked for 30 years. Lowe is asking for reinstatement or back pay and attorney's fees. Attorneys for the state of Idaho told a federal judge late last week a report by a physician hired by the federal court to summarize medical care at the Idaho Correctional Institution south of Boise does not reflect current conditions. In mid-March, the court made public the scathing report from correctional health care expert Mark Stern. The state's response says Stern did not thoroughly review conditions at the prison. Stern said in his report, terminal and long-term inmates under medical care sometimes were not given food, and there are numerous nursing mistakes that have likely caused some deaths or kidney failure. Stern noted one inmate was not told for 7 months that he likely had cancer. Stern said healthcare at the prison provided by the private company Corizon, based in Brentwood, Tennessee, amounts to neglect and cruel and unusual punishment. The report is part of the long-running lawsuit by inmates. Stern also wrote in his report, those inmates who were terminal or needed long-term medical care and could not move on their own were left in soiled linens sometimes, were not given adequate pain medications, and sometimes went without water. Stern termed those conditions inhumane. An 18-year-old kayaker died in Rock Lake in northwestern Whitman County yesterday afternoon. The wind came up, capsizing three kayaks participating in a Gonzaga Outdoors program run through the Spokane Parks and Recreation Department. Whitman County Sheriff's Department officials say the air temperature was 34 degrees when Christopher J. Gormley was pulled from the water. Gormley died at a hospital in Spokane while being treated for hypothermia. One other kayaker was treated at a hospital and released. The unemployment rate in Latah County dropped 8/10 of a percentage point between January and February. The official unemployment rate for January was 7.5%, but it was down to 6.7% in February. The unemployment rate in northern Idaho went down from 7.5% to 7.3% during the same period. The unemployment rate for February statewide in Idaho was 8%. Preliminary figures show Whitman County's unemployment rate went up 9/10 of a point to 6.6% in February. The January rate was 5.7%. The Whitman County rate continues to be the lowest in the state. Washington's statewide unemployment rate was 9.1% in February. A law firm representing a number of clients in the two-decades-old Hanford Downwinder lawsuit says it's unlikely enough of those recently sent settlement offers from lead defense attorneys will accept the deal. Kevin Van Wart of the Kirkland and Ellis law firm in Chicago recently sent the letters to a number of plaintiffs with hypothyroid disease. Plaintiff attorney Brian Depew of Engstrom, Lipscomb, and Lack told the Spokesman Review, they've made offers to my hypothyroid cases with a threshold that needs to accept before it's finalized. It's unlikely that we'll meet the threshold. I've had people sobbing on the telephone. Although the settlement proposals are marked confidential, one of Depew's clients, Linda Michael, told the paper she got a letter from Kirkland & Ellis giving her 60 days to accept $6,100 in exchange for dropping all claims against the nuclear contractors responsible for releasing radioactive iodine-131 and other radioactive elements into the atmosphere during the Green Run tests conducted in the 1940s. The 64-year-old Michael said the $6,100 is not enough. She said, I've had so many health problems. It's a terrible thing that happened at Hanford. The U.S. Department of Energy has approved $534,000 in settlements for Depew's 86 hypothyroid clients. Van Wart said of the hypothyroid cases, it's the largest claim category in the Hanford case. If they agree to settle, there will be no trial. Because the federal government indemnified Manhattan Project contractors working on the nuclear bomb projects, these settlements will be paid by the federal government. Taxpayers have already paid $60 million in legal fees for the class action Downwinder case, which had 2,300 plaintiffs after it was filed in 1990. Many of the original plaintiffs have settled, withdrawn, had a verdict in their favor, or died. There still is expected to be a trial next year for many of the 220 remaining thyroid cancer cases, which is a separate plaintiff category from the hypothyroid cases. There also is expected to be a trial next year for those who say they were exposed to Hanford radiation from Columbia River water. The Moscow City Council tonight will be asked to adopt 7 goals for fiscal year 2013. The suggested goals were agreed upon by the Council by consensus at a special meeting last week. The seven goals on the list: 1, develop a facilities master plan that addresses current and future city operations and space needs by 2014. 2, develop improvement plans for the beautification of public right-of-way at city entrances by 2014. 3, expand the perceived downtown area on Main Street from E Street to the South Couplet through construction of streetscape improvements, such as improvement repair of sidewalks, installation of street trees, and installation of luminaires and furnishings, and evaluating of zoning and development standards by 2016. 4, develop and implement a community relations plan to increase citizen participation and access to information using current technology and applications available, including but not limited to enhanced website services and social media by 2013. 5, transition from current annual goal-setting processes to long-range strategic planning processes for fiscal year 2014 budget development. 6, develop a citywide sidewalk plan that establishes objectives, identifies and prioritizes improvements, and defines funding opportunities for presentation to the City Council by 2015. And 7, participate in the development of a proposal for a countywide professional paramedic program by 2013. Also on tonight's agenda is approval of a draft professional services agreement with Terragraphics Environmental and SPF Water Engineering for Phase 2 of the Surface Water Reservoir Feasibility Study. The city is considering building a reservoir on or near Moscow Mountain to help serve the city's municipal water needs in the future. The council will also consider a set of alternative parking regulations for downtown between 3 and 6 a.m. to accommodate parking for businesses that have customers at 5 a.m., plus the needs of the city crews who clean the street during those hours. City staff came up with a system of flip-down no parking signs for the parts of the street that would be cleaned on a particular night. The council will also hear the annual report from Heart of the Arts Incorporated, which is contracted with the city to operate the 1912 Center. The Moscow City Council will meet tonight at 7 p.m. at City Hall. State Senator Mike Hewitt of Walla Walla is undergoing surgery today to remove a recently discovered thymoma tumor in his abdomen. Hewitt has been the top-ranking Republican in the state Senate since 2005. Hewitt said late last week he expects the surgery to be a success and hopes to be back at work by midweek after spending a couple of days recovering at the Washington Medical Center in Seattle. During the meantime, Senator Mark Schossler of Ritzville will act as temporary Republican floor leader, and Senator Joe Zarelli of Ridgefield will act as chief budget negotiator for the Republicans. Hewitt said if he is needed in Olympia for a critical vote this week, he'll be there. At a Republican fundraiser in Moscow Saturday, Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna said his education overhaul, which was called Students Come First, which supplies laptops for all high school students and makes students pass 2 online courses in order to graduate, will bring Idaho towards world-class standards. Luna said, "We have to have a standard equal to any other country in the world. If we have a lower standard, we're lying to our kids and haven't prepared them for the world that awaits them." Luna said the laptops will save hundreds of dollars on textbooks. He said that device becomes the textbook for every class, as well as an advanced calculator, a research tool, and a word processor. He also touted his merit pay bonuses program, which offers up to $8,000 to teachers who take leadership roles or increase their training to teach in harder-to-fill positions. He said his education overhaul, dubbed Students Come First, eliminates what he calls the archaic seniority process for teachers and removes tenure. Luna said about $40 million of new money is going to be distributed to teachers this year under the Pay for Performance plan. Luna's Students Come First program also eliminated collective bargaining for teachers except for salaries and benefits, and limits all teachers' contracts to 1 year. Idahoans will vote on repealing Luna's education overhaul laws in the November elections. There were two large sewer spills in the Columbia River last week. The first was a 500,000-gallon spill at the East Wenatchee Wastewater Treatment Plant on Sunday, March 25th. Department of Ecology officials say that spill was contained last Monday. The British Columbia Environmental Ministry reported more than 1 million gallons of raw sewage spilled into the Columbia River at Trail due to a broken pipe on Monday, the 26th. Trail is about 10 miles upstream from the international border. The pipe was not fixed until Tuesday afternoon. The Idaho Panhandle National Forest has extended the comment period on its draft forest management plan until Monday, May 7th. Panhandle Forest's supervisor, Mary Farnsworth, said the decision to extend the comment period came after receiving requests from several communities. Farnsworth said the plans reflect 10 years of working with our partners, communities, and interested publics, and we want to ensure they all have ample time to digest what is contained in these documents and provide meaningful comments. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, increasing clouds tonight, low around 35. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, high 62. Breezy east winds 10 to 15, becoming southwest, gusts up to 25. And Tuesday night, 80% chance of rain, mainly after midnight. Snow level 5,600 feet, lowering to 3,300 feet, low 35. West winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 30 miles an hour. On Wednesday, 2 to 4 inches of snow possible. 100% chance of snow showers, high 41. West winds 15 to 20, gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Wednesday night, 40% chance of snow showers, mainly before midnight, mostly cloudy, low 27. Southwest winds 5 to 15, gusts up to 20, less than half an inch of new snow possible. Wednesday night and Thursday, 50% chance of snow showers, mainly afternoon, mostly cloudy, high 43, little or no snow accumulation expected. Currently fair skies, 49 degrees in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, Eat the Airwaves. News and opinions from the West Side, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to contribute to Radio Free Moscow. Coming up at 7:30, live in the studios, Climate Justice Forum with Helen Yost and Occupy Wall Street Radio out of New York City comes on at 9. And more entertainment and music throughout the evening here at KRFP Moscow. I'm Lee Rubartas. Have a great night.